Welcome to the Simplified Search Marketing Podcast. Are you ready to get better performance out of your digital marketing efforts? Do you want more from your current paid search or SEO strategy? You are in the right place. Let's get started. With solid information you can use, here is your host, digital marketing expert and author, Joe Balestrino.
This is Joe Balestrino, and welcome to episode 4 of the Simplify Search Marketing Podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about Google Ad Suspensions. And I want to discuss what to do when you receive an email from Google, and what not to do, and how to figure out what the problem is. So, usually when website owners get an email, they freak out, and their first course of action is to immediately appeal and say to Google, I've done nothing wrong. I don't know why you've suspended my account. Please reinstate my account. And what happens is, as soon as you do that, Google will then automatically trigger another suspension. Not a different one, but the same one will stay. But the way Google looks at it is every time you appeal and you get rejected, it's another strike against you. So if you start accumulating strikes, after so many strikes, you're out. How many strikes? I don't know. It's not clear. I think it has a lot to do with the severity, but also the repeatedness of constantly trying to appeal something and not fixing it. Google will just ban you just to not have to deal with you continually telling them you've done nothing wrong and you don't know what the issue is and you should be reinstated. Now, it doesn't matter if you have a new account or an old account, you can still get suspended. It doesn't matter if you have a paid account or a Google Ads grant account, you can still be suspended. And like I said, repeated suspensions can lead to a permanent ban. So the first thing you want to do is try to find out what the reason is. Now, when your account is suspended, it just means your ads can't run until you figure out what the issue is. So they could be your merchant account could be suspended as well. So is it a violation in your Google Ads account or is it a Merchant Center account? And if it's a Merchant Center account, you would have to go in there and see what the issues there may be. So some of the most common, and this podcast is going to go over the most common ones I see. There is a lot, and they're updated with some frequency, and they evolve, and they don't always mean what they appear to mean, and so you really have to investigate. So I'm going to go over the ones that I see the most. So one of the most common ones I see is undesirable business practices. That's where you're doing something where Google doesn't feel your business model is something they want promoted on their search engine. So I'll give you an example. There was a client years ago reached out to me where their service was, if you wanted to change your address and you were moving, that they would advertise in Google Ads. You would go to their website, you would fill out the change of address form, pay them a couple of bucks, and then they would go to the post office and fill it out for you. Now, you could go to the post office and do it yourself for free, and I think you could also do it online for free at the time. But Google didn't like the idea of that business practice of charging someone to do something for free. Years ago, I would do affiliate marketing, and I was an eBay affiliate, and I would send traffic from Google to a landing page that had products, and people would click those, the products on the page and go to eBay and buy, and if they bought from eBay, I would get a commission. And that worked great for a couple of years, and then Google updated their policy, and Google decided that that wasn't a good practice, it was an undesirable business practice. They didn't like the idea of sending someone from an ad to a website that then sent them somewhere else. And in the world of COVID, Google also doesn't like companies selling masks that didn't sell masks before COVID. So sometimes you run into issues because, you know, you were selling scarves and now you're selling masks. And to Google, that's taking advantage of a particular situation, and that could cause you problems as well. Bait and switch is one I see a lot, and this happens a lot when people aren't paying attention to their campaign. So let's say you're running ads on your website and your ads have the price in them, or they say free shipping, or buy one, get one free, whatever offer you have going out at the time, and it's in your ads or your shopping ads, and then people click over to the website, but the prices have changed, or the offer has changed. You no longer offer free shipping, or it's no longer buy one, get one free. And so to Google, that's a bait and switch, and Google, you know, that's obviously not great for user experience either. And it's not good for you because you're wasting money for people who are expecting to get something for a certain price, and then they get to the site and realize that it's not, and that can hurt your reputation. So mismanagement can sometimes lead to some of these violations. Misleading content. If, you know, you're writing about something that you're not an expert in, for example, like the medical industry, if you're not a doctor and you're giving medical advice, that's, you know, misleading content, and you can get flagged for that. Other common issues fall around billing. A lot of things have to do with billing and suspicious payments. If you Google charges you and you dispute the charge and it's a chargeback, Google will suspend your account. If you haven't paid your bill, Google can suspend your account. If you're using a prepaid card, one of those, you know, those virtual cards, a card that's, you know, already linked to another Google Ads account, those things can lead to suspension. So you want to make sure that you look into those. And also, whatever your address is in your banking information, on your bank statement, make sure it matches exactly to Google Ads. So if you live on 123 Main Street and on your bank statement it's spelled out STREET, but in Google Ads it's spelled out ST, or on your bank statement it's apartment 2B and you're in Google's billing it's 2B, you might need to go in there and update that if this is one of the policy violations that you're seeing, because something that small, though it doesn't seem like a big deal, it's a big enough deal to Google to want to make sure that the billing information is correct. You want to make sure that you're not missing any business information on your website. So especially this falls into shopping, and also business too. I want to say business as well, business ads, lead gen ads, is that your contact information should be easily accessible from the website. So you want to make sure it's easy for people to find your address, your phone number, email, not just the form, because forms break all the time, and Google wants people to have multiple ways to get a hold of you, especially if they're doing business with you. They want as much transparency as possible. You also want to make sure that you're not doing any redirects. You know, if you've changed domain names or something and one's redirecting to the other, in Google Ads, it has to be a straight shot. There should be no redirects in between. And if once Google catches the redirect, they'll automatically suspend your account. Deceptive content is also another one I see quite a bit of. Deceptive could be something like a get-rich-quick scheme, a guarantee of results. If you have something as simple as dry skin, your product can't say that it cures dry skin. Anything that has a cure or a guarantee tied to it could be flagged, and because a lot of these are manually reviewed, and so somebody's manually looking at the site to see what's, you know, what's on the site and what they feel is in violation. So avoid using anything like the word cure in your ads or your landing pages. Avoid using trademark terms. Trademark terms is a big no-no. I recently worked with a CPA, and what we did was we created some ads for him, and in about a week and a half after we started running ads, his account was suspended due to counterfeit products. And it was really intriguing, because my first thought was, well, he's not selling any products, so how could it be counterfeiting? And then the only thing I could think of was the issue was that part of his service was he would set up a company's Intuit account, which is a software, accounting software. And I said, okay, let's remove, you know, anything to do with Intuit. He had landing pages that, you know, were especially for Intuit setup. We removed them completely. I appealed, and then about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, the account was up and running again. So I would think that would be under use of trademarks, but in this case, it came out under counterfeit goods. Another way that you can get flagged is, let's say you're doing something shady, or maybe it's not shady. So let's say your business is located in New York and you want to do some kind of donation collection for, you know, Puerto Rico. To Google, that may not make sense. And so if you get flagged for that, you'll have to prove to Google that you're a legitimate company, that you're not just trying to take money from people and get donations and take advantage of, you know, a catastrophe, if, you know, Katrina or something like that. There was, you know, a lot of damage. A lot of people were trying to donate and help, but there was also a lot of scammers. So Google just does this to make sure that, you know, that the, you know, the donations are legitimate and it's part of a legitimate organization. Another thing I see a lot of is websites getting hacked. So if your site gets hacked, you'll know, because Google will send you an email saying that there's malware. Or if you Google your business, Google inside search results will say this site has been hacked, or this site may have been hacked. And then Google will stop running your ads to protect people from going there. Now, this process, it involves you not just telling Google that the site is clean, right? If Google's telling you your site has malware, and your first indication is to say, no, it doesn't, you have to make sure that you scan the site to verify that there's no malicious content. If you're on WordPress, there's a high chance that it's true that your site's been hacked. You need to find out what files were infected, how your site got infected. So let's say you find out that a plugin was breached and someone put in some code through that plugin. You have to let Google know that you've found the issue, that it came in from a plugin. You remove the files, maybe list out the, you know, pieces of code that were injected into the site, the plugin in question that was triggering the issue, and submit that to Google, because you can't just go to Google and say, we fixed the problem. Google is going to want to know exactly how you fixed the problem. So you need to be as detailed as possible to say, here's what we did. This was the reason. And, you know, it's going to cost you money, obviously, to find someone to fix this. If you're lucky enough, if you're on hosting like WP Engine, they're very expensive WordPress hosting. But the great thing about them is if your site's been hacked, they'll clean it up for you as part of their service. At least I think they still do that. And so, you know, you'll get it cleaned up, but then you'll also have to, you know, have them provide you with the information that you can give to Google to let Google know that those things have been fixed. And sometimes the hacking or the malware is not necessarily on your site. So sometimes, and this is what makes it difficult, and a lot of people don't know this, is that you could be linking to a site that's been hacked. So let's say you have a blog post on your website that you're linking to a website, and that website got hacked, and you're promoting, you know, your service pages and with Google Ads, and there's no links to other sites. They're just to your site, and so you're not like sending people from an ad to this particular website, but it's still found on your domain. So there's still a possibility that somebody can navigate to it. So if Google finds that, Google will flag your site to prevent people from, you know, potentially visiting that website. So you would have to find that link and then tell Google there was a, you know, a blog post that we had that was linking to a site that wound up, you know, that was hacked, and we removed that link from our website. And that will fix the issue. But a lot of people don't know that you need to look there to make sure that, you know, that that's not happening. What else do I have here? So let's talk about Google Shopping. Google Shopping, there's, you know, with everybody starting Shopify stores and e-commerce having a big boom, I'm seeing more and more of these issues coming up. And some of these are not really big issues that are easy fixes, and I'll go into what they are. When you start a Shopify store, any e-commerce store, there's four really important pages that you must have in order to even use Google Shopping. And that's a privacy policy page, which is usually what most, I think Shopify has a default privacy policy page you can use. But you also need to have a return and refund policy on the website. And it's okay to be in the footers. I wouldn't put these in the main navigation. As long as they're in the footer, most people know to look in the footer. And Google, when Google manually reviews the site, will go look in the footer. You need to have a contact us page. That would be helpful if that was in the header of the website. Also, your address, phone number, email, as I said earlier, should be on that page, so it's easy for people to contact you. And this is the one that I see that's most overlooked, that gets people into a lot of trouble, is an About Us page. And not just a regular About Us page. It says, you know, we sell ABZ tea products or whatever it is, CBD oil, whatever, and you know, we strive to offer, you know, quality customer care, customer service. That's not enough for Google, and that's certainly not enough for your customers if you want people to buy with you, right? Your website, you know, there's a lot that goes into a website, and I'll go into this into another episode, but your site, when people come to your site, you want to prevent them from leaving and trying to find out more about your company. And a lot of times, unless you offer something really unique, people will just hit the back button and just go to another website that gives them the information they need. One of the things that they want is they want to know who they're buying from. So your About Us page needs to be as robust as possible. You know, photos of your offices or your warehouse or your staff or all of those things. The history of the company, the history of the owner, what made the owner start this business. Even if it's a dropshipping business, you need to, you know, communicate to the visitor exactly, you know, who you are, who your company is, so that they feel safe ordering from you, and you know, to give Google the perception that you're a real company and that you're not just gonna advertise and take people's money. So in order to do that, it's important that you make sure that you have an About Us page. The other thing I see a lot in shopping feeds, issues there that can get you policy violations, is data feed issues. So earlier I was talking about mismatching stuff. A lot of times with the data feed, part of shopping management is to update your feed on a regular basis. It could be once a week. It could be every day, depending on how often you update your products. But you don't want to have misinformation. You don't want to have a product that's, you know, no longer available on your website, but now is in your shopping feed and people are clicking over to just find out that the product's out of stock. That's a waste of your money, and that's a bad user experience, so you wouldn't want to do that. Again, if pricing has changed, if your feed's not updated regularly and it's been 6 months and product's pricing has changed, it needs to be updated on Google's end so that when the user sees it in the shopping panels on Google, that the price is reflective, so is if free shipping and all those things. So if they're not there, you want to make sure that it is updated. Other things that could get you suspended with Google Shopping is checkout requirements, right? We have checkout requirements. You want to make sure, obviously, it's secure. Let people know where they are in the shopping process. If your shopping process is long, it's better to have shorter sections with a little thing that says you're in step 1 of 4. That helps keep people, going through the process because they know eventually it'll end. And then anything that you can do to make sure that you're giving people all the information up front before they pay, like taxes and shipping costs and things like that. We want to make sure that everything is on the up and up. Now, Google grant suspensions are also a big thing. Google gives businesses $10,000 a month, nonprofits, to advertise. And years ago, it didn't matter, what you did with that $10,000. I mean, you could advertise on any kind of keywords. There would be a limit. You could only spend like a dollar. But it didn't matter what type of keywords you went on. And a lot of times when I worked on accounts, the keywords are so way off from what the organization was doing, just because they didn't know how to leverage it. And so Google has given guidelines to that, right? Things including like you can't, don't use branded keywords that aren't yours. You can't bid on single keywords. You have to have at least 2 site extensions. You have to remove any keywords that have a quality score of 3 or below. You have to maintain a 5% click-through rate. So if you're not maintaining at least a 5% click-through rate for 2 consecutive months, Google will suspend your account. So it's important, if you're using Google Grants accounts, that you're following these guidelines. And I have this guide on the website. I also have free articles on the website that talk about Google Grants. But again, you can grab the guide from my website for, I think it's $4.95. But one thing I want to touch on before I end this episode, and it's probably the biggest thing that people run into. So the most common reason I get contacted is about Google Ads suspension is because of this one recurring policy violation, and that is circumventing. If you received an email about circumventing policies from Google, I can tell you the main reason why you get that. There's a lot of reasons that fall under it, but 9 out of 10 times, the main reason is you have more than one Google Ads account. So let's say you've had a Google Ads account for, somebody contacted me 2 days ago. They have an account for 10 years. They've spent about $1 million a year, I think it was, and they created a new account for a new business. 2 days later, it was suspended. Now, they're freaking out because they're like, well, what's going on? We set up this account like we set up the other account. What's the problem? The problem is if you're going to create an account and you already have an account and you're using the same billing information, same name, same credit card, in Google's eyes, you might as well just use the same account because you can set campaigns up, individual campaigns, and each campaign could have its own budget. It's easier for you to manage, and Google doesn't want you to have more than one account because years ago, businesses used to do is the big companies, they would create multiple ad groups, multiple Google Ads accounts, they would then duplicate their websites in different colors and different themes and different logos, and then they would advertise on the same keywords. And then they would try to monopolize the first page of Google. Sure, they were competing against themselves, but they didn't really care because to them, at the end of the day, they were taking up all the slots on the keywords that they wanted to own. And so Google, you know, had put this policy in place. Now, a lot of times businesses don't know that, and they just go and create like, oh, I'm going to start a new business with my buddy, and, you know, we're going to have this business and we're going to create a new account. But your information's already tied to another account, and Google knows that, right? And if you most of the time Google will suspend the new account, but sometimes they'll suspend the old account. So if the old account is the one that's doing the best, then Google will just, you know, may suspend either or. Sometimes they'll suspend both, and neither one of them will be updated, you know, will be fixed until one of them is deleted. And when it's deleted, you then need to go and appeal and let Google know that you didn't know, that you weren't able to, you're not allowed to create two accounts, and that, you know, you deleted the other account, and could they reinstate your old account? And in most cases, they will. And now if the new account is suspended, then just delete it and just go on and then set up your campaign in the new account. So you don't want to create new accounts. And sometimes, and I don't know why this is, but people will say, oh, well, you know, the other account wasn't doing well, so I created a new account. That doesn't make sense. You just create a new campaign and start over. Your account, you know, there's a thing called account history. And the longer you have the account, the better it is. Creating a new account has its disadvantages because you're kind of in a sandbox. It takes a while for Google to kind of get things ramping up and running, and you have to kind of build trust in between that new account. Google's watching to see what you do and how you use the new account. So the old account is better. Now, if you plan to start a new business, then obviously a new business would, you know, be a new name. It might be the same address, but it would be, you know, you would hopefully have a business card that would have the business name on it, and that should be enough to get you to get a new account without getting flagged. But it's easier just to just keep the one account, not create multiple accounts. Sometimes people say, you know, I had an account 10 years ago, and I don't remember what the login is, or, you know, 5 years ago, I talked to someone who had 12 accounts. And he just kept opening up accounts and creating new logins. And the only solution there was to go back and find all of them and delete them all. So don't do that. And anytime you have a violation, make sure you do your research. Check out my website, joeballestrino.com. Check out the free articles. Download the ebook. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me at joe@joeballestrino.com. Let me know you got my information from the podcast. And I look forward to talking to you guys in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Simplified Search Marketing Podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. If you like the show, leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Join us next time for another episode of the Simplified Search Marketing Podcast.